broadcast for shooters, hunters, and gun enthusiasts. This is the Firearms Radio Network.
Welcome to the Reloading Podcast here on the Firearms Radio Network. Tonight, we're finishing up, starting over kind of, Brass. And then we're moving on to covering... Jeremy's going to talk a bit about his... Wow, it's so secret, I forgot what it was.
The Great Brass Test of 2015.
Yeah. See? Oh, thank God for editing.
See, anyway. I knew it.
So.
Alcohol will do that to you, Mike.
I can't blame it on alcohol. I haven't had enough yet.
Old age?
Sure. We'll go with that. Or general dumbassery.
We'll go along with that.
It's funny. My birthday was August 30th, and I just got an email from Realtree wishing me a happy birthday. That's hilarious. Anyway, that's what happens when somebody asks you for an email when you start your podcast. Dag nabbit. So, first off, what has everybody done for fun in the last week?
Go ahead, Jeremy. I'm sorry.
I was going to say... Let's see, I had a busy week last week. Monday, I went and picked up, didn't find a whole lot of brass. I got some reclaimed, bullets for melting down to ingots. And then Wednesday, I went out and finished shooting, these test loads for the test cases for the 308 brass. And then I started, measuring the case capacities and the fired brass. And then yesterday in the guns and NRA world, we have a special early season private lane hunt here in Arkansas for antlerless deer only. And so I went and laid a doe on the ground yesterday morning. Pretty good sized doe too. So
yummy.
Put a good bit of meat in the freezer. So she was probably about five and a half year old doe. So she was pretty good size. I was pretty happy about that.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That new 30-30 worked out pretty good.
Now, the nozzle partition bullet you used, was it a round nose, flat nose? Was it a spire point? Did you, single load it? That sort of thing.
It was the 170 grain round nose. Partition.
Okay.
And it laid a wallop on that deer. So.
Well, it's nice to hear that it did exactly what it's supposed to do. Next year you'll have to try cast bullets. But remember, with a cast bullet, where you hit is where you kill. You know what I'm saying? You put one through, you might kill her. She'll die eventually if you put one through her ribs, to hit a good lung shot. But the point is, you're not going to do any meat damage. Remember, the bullet simply penetrates.
Okay, kind of like a muzzle loader type bullet.
Very much like a Full Metal Jacket.
Okay, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, that's what I was going to say. That's the goal for next year, is to get some cast bullets and try them out in my 30-30. Might have to try it in this early season hunt.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is shot placement is going to be everything.
10-4.
How about you, Jerry? Jason, what'd you do?
Oh, I cleaned and prepped some 308 brass this week. And I probably got about 500 pieces done, so they're ready to load up.
Anything else, sir?
That was it.
Mike, what'd you do this week?
Found a cast iron pot to render my wheel weights in.
Excellent.
And that's it.
Well, I've had a little bit of a busy week. First thing happened earlier this week is my tumbler died. Died twice. And it did. The second time was an ugly death. The motor, I've had it for probably 15, 18, 20 years. I don't even know how long I've had it. But the bearings kind of got real tight on me. So I put a little WD-40 on it, and I got it to... loosened all up and all that stuff. But then the very next day, the motor itself seized up. That is to say, when I'd energize it, it would not turn. When I'd take and turn it off, it turned fine. Anyway, so Jim needs to get himself another tumbler. And then most of what I've been doing this week is just working on my 38 special project. I Almost got it done. I think I'm down to about 250, 300 rounds left to reload, and then I'll be all caught up, and all my bullets will be...
Anyway, so when we last left the gang, they were headed off to the range.
With he was.
Ladder load in tow, along with Grandpappy's 308.
Yeah, the Model 70, wasn't it, by the way?
We never decided what it was. We'll leave that up to everybody's imagination.
I thought sure it was Model 70.
It could be. It might not be.
Could be Savage 99, too.
Yeah, or it could be a 1903 rebarreled and reactioned.
Oh, that's now that's a crime against nature.
It happened.
That is a crime. I know that. It's still a crime against nature.
Or here's another one that a lot of people don't know about. It could be an American-made Enfield in 308 as the original caliber. Because after World War II, you could pick those up for about $20. And if you got lucky, you got one of the 308 ones, not one of the 303.
You're right. I didn't even know about that.
Yeah, unfortunately, mine's a 303. I wish it was a 308. But
how difficult would it be to rechamber?
303 is a long cartridge, so.
Oh, yeah, you'd shorten the barrel by far.
Yeah.
What's a bullet diameter?
It's 303 is actually, I believe, a 311. I'm not sure. I haven't started reloading.
310, 311, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. It's bigger than a... It's bigger than your standard 7.62.
Right, it would just drop through.
And that would play havoc on accuracy.
Yes.
You wouldn't have any. You wouldn't have any. Well, Jason knows all about shooting undersized bullets in an oversized rifle.
Yeah, Jason, don't you?
I just wanted to see what would happen in a STHF.
That was a scientific experiment.
STHF scenario. That's all. That's it. And now I advise that you guys and the listeners do not do that. Lesson learned. Case closed. Get past it.
In other words, Jason doesn't want any more harassment.
Well, this is the first I've heard about it. Did you get a pattern instead of a group?
Were you not listening to the podcast before you joined the podcast?
Amazingly, no.
For shame.
Well, I didn't know about it until y'all asked me to come on at that one time.
Well... One of us managed to make the mistake of picking up his son's ammunition and loading it into his own rifle. He wasn't really looking where he's picking up his ammunition. It turns out that he put 270 ammunition in a 30-06 rifle, and the bullets just basically dropped out of the end of the gun.
Oh, dang.
Well, no, it didn't drop out. It went with a... But
yeah, it went off and all that, and it did come out of the gun. Right. Yeah. I ignore the range.
No.
They did not hit my target.
Jason, did you reclaim that 270 brass is 30-06 then?
Oh, absolutely. That's mine.
And I'll bet you Brandon was bitching every second you did.
It's my fire farm brass. Leave me alone.
Hey, you paid the price for it, Bubba. You might as well enjoy it.
Yep.
That's funny.
You know, that's why we tell everybody not to do what we do.
Yeah, don't do the dumb things we do. Only do the smart things. So we were lucky, and we got to take Grandpappy's out to a 300-yard range. And we have about, you know, there's three that are sub-MOA, and there's total of about five shots that are probably, you know, probably about 5 inches apart.
That's still MOA.
Not at 300 yards.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry.
But, so what do we do now? How do we figure out what we're going to do? Because we've got our ladder result. We've got our results. But how do we figure out which load's the right load?
Well, you said you had three that are under 3 1/4 or 3 1/8 inches, right?
Right.
And that's I just did it, the calculator thing, and one MOA is 1.047 at 100 yards. Three times that is 3.141. So what we're talking about is well under 3 inches.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what we can do then from here is we could try to see if we have a, what they call a node, and a node of, you know, three to five shots that are clustered very tightly together.
Okay.
And comparatively speaking, I should say.
Right.
Now, if you're shooting 5 inches, that's 1 1/4, 1 1/2 MOA. That's not what you really want. But again, too, you know, for deer hunting purposes, that's still perfectly fine. But if you really want to take and worry, you know, take the hide off that coyote at 600 yards, you need to shoot. You need to shoot sub MOA, if not better. So we'll go with those three rounds we found that are about 2 3/4 inches apart. How's that sound, Mike?
That sounds like a good plan.
Well, that would be about 0.8 MOA. That's just a guesstimate. I could be wrong on my math.
Okay. So let's suppose that those loads were 43.5, 43.9, and 44.2. So now what do we do?
Well, in my experience, what I've learned to do is go with the middle load. I don't remember exactly what your numbers were, but whichever one you named, I think it was 43.9.
Yep, that'd be the middle.
That's where I actually start developing my load right there. You can actually run another ladder load from all three rounds, from the minimum to the middle to the maximum, but it's kind of really not worth it because that mid-range is really the sweet spot you've been looking for, generally speaking.
Okay, so do we want to just go with that, or do we want to double check and just make sure?
That's up to the reloader and how much money he wants to spend.
Okay. Now, if it was me personally, what I would do is I would take all three of those. I would make five rounds of each.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would go back to the range. And at the same distance, the same scope setting and everything, I wouldn't change a thing on the rifle. I'd put it back the exact same way. I'd recreate the exact same procedure as close as I could to what I did when I shot the original lander load. And then I would see out of those three powder charges, which group the best. And that's probably the one I would go with. But yeah, usually it is the middle one. So that'd be the 43.9. If you're just going to grab the middle one and run, then you can do that. Otherwise, if you're still, you know, you, like Jim said, you can take those three and you can use the 43.5 and the 44.2 and you can put those in the ladder load calculator, which is pinned to the Reloading Podcast Facebook page, and you could put that in, or you could just make up five of the 43.9 and see how they group. And if they group well, then you don't need to do anything else. And away you go.
Yep.
So you take your 43.9, you load up your ammunition, and away you go.
Sounds kind of easy.
Well, we already did all the hard work.
Well, maybe not easy, but simple.
Yeah.
And no, I'm not casting aspersions on anyone's intelligence. Well, never mind, Jason.
Oh. Oh. Ouch.
It's a good thing a 308 won't carry for 2,500 miles.
Keep talking crap, old man. Your day will come.
y'all get me every time you get a chance. So I might as well get sneaky just right back with the rest of y'all.
Oh, that's funny.
So we're pretty much done with the ladder. Does that conclude the starting over kind of bottleneck series?
Well, yes. Yes, it does.
Believe so. I mean, it's pretty much that easy.
Now, if any of you have questions, then, you know, by all means, send them in and we'll answer them. But, yeah, that pretty much covers everything.
I have a question.
12.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So on the podcast where you guys spiked my computer and it died, I was listening to it.
Yeah.
And Jeremy was talking about shooting your OCW at 300 or better to get a truer reading on, I believe, the speeds, the consistency of the speed. Does that sound correct, Jeremy?
Do it. Say that again.
You were recommending shooting your OCW at 300 yards or better to get a true reading on the consistency of the speed of your bullet.
No, shoot the ladder at 300. Yeah. Or more. OCW can be done at 100, but the ladder test really needs to be done at 300 or more, because then you can get that know that, you know, you might find three groups like what Mike had said, and then you pick the middle load and your speeds will, whether you go 0.1 or 0.2 grain low or high, you'll still be within that node and you'll still, your velocities will still be the same.
Gotcha. What I was thinking was, when I heard you say that, was if a person doesn't have access at the time for 300, he could, and he does have a chronograph, he could be shooting his tests over the chrony to get the same type of information, don't you think?
Yeah, you could. I mean, you definitely, your more consistent loads are going to do better at further ranges. So, I mean, it may look like crap group-wise, but...
Oh, and tighten up the farther out they go?
Yep, actually,
yeah.
Yep.
He's talking about a phenomenon known as bullet sleeping, where bullets will actually settle, you know, they'll flop around, wobble around under 200 yards, and after 200 yards, they seem to go to sleep and settle down and start flying straight and true.
Hmm. Yep. So you may have, like, a freaking inch-and-a-half group at 100 yards, but have the lowest SD in that group, and that'll be your best 100, or that may be your best load at 600 yards,
because
you got... more consistent speed.
Okay.
Are you going to really be able to tell? Because, I mean, you shouldn't have the chronograph. You're probably not going to notice more than maybe, you know, 5 to 10 feet per second difference in the loads, are you?
You'd be surprised.
Okay.
Oh, you'll notice.
Oh, yeah, you'll notice that.
Okay, I've not shot... my last ladder load I did, I didn't have the benefit of a chronograph, so I didn't get to see the benefits, so...
I mean...
Go ahead, Jeremy. I'm sorry.
Going from, like, you know, one load and then just going 0.3 grains higher. I mean, you'll notice, you know, anywhere from 10 to 15 feet per second difference just in 0.3 grain difference in the load.
Okay.
I've seen as much as 30. You know, when I'm shooting a ladder load over a chronograph, mm-hmm. I've seen as much as 30 feet per second difference between two and a half tenths.
Okay.
Yeah, but the point we're making is that, or what the point, I believe, to sum it up, Jeremy, the point Jeremy's making is the ones that you get the best standard deviation for, he calls it SD, we all do, but the one you get the best standard deviation for, you're going to probably find out that at the longer ranges, it may be the more consistent load.
Yep. Yeah,
that is interesting. I did not know that.
Haven't you ever noticed that the groups seem to open up a little bit, but yet suddenly at 300 yards or even longer, you seems like you can shoot better, Jason?
I don't shoot that often. I think 218 yards is our norm. And when I have shot farther, I didn't have paper to shoot at. I was just shooting at steel, so I couldn't.
I see.
I couldn't get a good, or couldn't see it in my results, you know.
Right. Yeah. The only thing you can do is paint the steel, try to take them, you know, position it, and that doesn't work well. You need paper for a record.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We all know that. Okay.
So up next is the Great Brass Test of 2015. And you ask what that is, folks. Well,
I'm going to put my microphone to sleep because Jeremy's got a bunch of talking to do.
About a month and a half ago, Jeremy got a wild hair. See, Jeremy's an F-class shooter, and they're almost as OCD as bullseye shooters. Not quite. So they're a little sane. Not really, but they're a little sane. And he's always trying to get better. Which there's nothing wrong with. That's what we're all shooting for, and that's why we reload, is we're trying to get better. And so in Jeremy's quest to improve, he decided that he was going to do a brass test to see. It started out, I think, as, what, one or two categories you were going to check, Jeremy, and then it just kind of expanded from there?
Yeah, it just kind of exploded. I got a workbook in Excel, and it's got a bunch of tabs. I mean, I checked anything and everything that you could check on the tab without actually, can't remember the name of the tool, but it checked the wall thickness down in the web. I don't have that tool. Anything and everything that you can check with a caliper and a scale, I checked. Even down to shooting it and getting muzzle velocities and standard deviations and all that good stuff. I mean, I checked anything and everything. So yes.
Didn't you check case capacities and diameters after you shot the brass, Jeremy?
I thought you were muting your microphone.
Yeah, exactly. You couldn't
ask
any
questions.
I gotta talk.
I did check the capacity brand new from the factory, and also checked the capacities after fired with the loads that I had. So yes, I did a lot of measuring, a lot of weighing, a lot of shooting. So because there was 225 rounds that had to be shot, so which I'm not complaining about. I always enjoy shooting. So
what'd you learn?
Well, not to step on any toes out there, but there's brass that you get your money's worth, and there's brass that you don't. If you're looking at just as far as consistency of the brass, let's go with overall case length from the longest, the difference between the longest and the shortest. The Pua Palma was actually the best. They just had a little over a thousandth of an inch difference between the longest and the shortest. And I can actually tell you the difference, but let me see here. With La Pua Palma, they came from factory at 2.005. So, I mean, they didn't really have to be trimmed. But the second best in that category was this Peterson brass, made by Peterson Cartridge Company. And, all of their brass was right around the 2.0 mark. And their brass, from the longest to the shortest, from the factory, just had 2/1000ths of an inch difference. But I'll be talking more about Peterson. That just out the gate, Peterson brass is extremely consistent, from what I've found through all the tests that I've done. Extremely, extremely consistent. Some of the worst brass from longest to shortest, the consistency in it, Federal was the worst, along with Winchester. Both of them were right around 9/1000ths of an inch difference between the shortest and the longest, which isn't too bad if you're going to trim them all back. That way you can make sure they're going to be consistent. That is the one good thing. But if you don't have to trim the brass, then hey, you know, less prep work is always better because there's a ton of it to do anyway. There was one other company that I didn't have to trim the brass, and that was Nosler. All their brass was around the the 2-inch mark as well. The second worst with Federal Winchester tying at 9,000 of an inch. The second worst was the Lapua Standard, which was the large rifle primer. They were the second worst brass as far as consistency in the overall length. So I was actually kind of surprised about that, to be honest with you. Norma, Hornaday Norma Remington fell in the middle. Let's see here. Going on to primer pocket depth, the one that had the most consistent was Norma, which you would kind of figure with the expensive brass. Then the second best was actually Peterson at primer pocket depth. Norma, Peterson, they were up at the top. Again, Lapua Standard, the large rifle, was down at the bottom. And when I say bottom, I did nine different head stamps, which included Norma, Peterson, Nosler, Winchester, the Lapua Palma Brass, which is a small rifle primer, Remington Federal Hornaday, and then Lapua, the standard large rifle primer. And with most of these, they sent me cases for testing review, and if they sent me more than 25, say they sent me 50 or 100 or whatever, I basically poured the cases out on the floor and I cherry picked 25 out of the what they sent me. So it was purely random. I didn't say, oh, this case looks good, or, you know, I didn't pre-measure anything. I just randomly picked cases. That way you can see a kind of a true picture of what you're going to get from the factory. It's completely random, completely unbiased. Lapua actually kind of surprised me. The standard brass, the large rifle, they didn't stand up quite as good as what I thought they would as far as consistency. You can take that at what you will. I mean, you can see the spreadsheet and all that good stuff and kind of make up your own mind from that. What I was impressed about is when I went and shot them, Peterson, let me back it up real quick. One of my hypotheses was weight versus, the case capacity, H2O case capacity. And my hypothesis was the closer the case capacity was, the less standard deviation there would be. You know, everybody likes to group their cases by weights, where I group my cases by case capacity. Well, the hypothesis was less case capacity, less standard deviation, and that the ones that had less standard deviation in the case capacity, you would have, they would do better velocity-wise, standard deviation wise than the ones that had a more consistent weight, which that is completely false. The ones that had the best standard deviation, as far as shooting them, muzzle velocity, all that good stuff, the ones that had the best standard deviation were the ones that had the more consistent case capacities. Weight doesn't mean a single thing because, Peterson actually had, they were about middle of the road as far as the heaviest case to the lightest case. They're about middle of the road. Nosler was actually the best and Hornaday was the worst, but case capacity, Peterson was the best. And when I went and shot them, the loads that I had made up, Peterson and Federal, which had the case capacities that were the closest as far as least to most, like Peterson only had less than half a grain difference between heaviest or between the least amount of difference in the greatest case capacity and the lightest case capacity. Peterson and Federal had the lowest difference, and those two loads actually gave me the best standard deviation when I went and shot 25 rounds. Peterson actually gave me a standard deviation of 8 over 25 rounds. Standard deviation, wow. 8 feet per second, which is really good. And then yeah, Federal only gave me 9 feet per second difference, standard deviation. So, and those two cases were the ones that had the least difference in the H2O capacity. So, and Lapua and Norma, your two heavy hitters up towards the line for brass or for match shooters, they didn't fare too well. They didn't fare quite as good as what I thought they would. So like I said, the standard deviation this year, I don't want to get into numbers too much, but on muzzle velocity, I'm just going to do the best muzzle velocity was standard deviation was Peterson with 8.48%, and the next was Federal. The worst was Nosler and Norma. So, and the Lapuas were kind of middle of the pack. So
what were the differences on the Nosler and Lapua?
21 feet per second standard deviation for Norma and 26 for Nosler.
Okay.
Which really surprised me. I was really shocked about that. But if you go to the H2O capacity, the standard deviation for Norma was actually one of the worst. So it matches up with what I saw over the chronograph. So, and that like I said, that really surprised me. Overall, Peterson brass, extremely consistent. Hardly any brass prep needed. And I didn't do a whole lot of brass prep. I merely trimmed the ones that need to be trimmed. Generally, I go through everything like uniforming primer pockets and flash hood burr and all that. All I did was trim, load them, and I loaded them all with Winchester large rifle primers except for the Lapua Palma one. And I used a CCI small rifle primer. Other than that, all the other cases got loaded with the same Winchester large rifle primer lot, and they all got loaded with the same lot number of IMR 4895, and they all got loaded with the same lot number of 150 grain Hornaday full metal jacket bullets. So basically the only difference between any of these was the case itself. These were straight from manufacturer, and the Peterson and Federal and Remington were actually the top three. So I was pretty surprised about that, to be honest with you, especially with you know, how much some of the brass out there their runs.
Right.
So Peterson price wise is going to run you about the same price as Lapua and Norma, but from what I saw on the test, you definitely get your money's worth with Peterson. So, and I'll just leave it at that.
Tactfully done, Jeremy. Thank you, sir.
Now, are you looking at carrying this further with further reloads?
Yes, I am. I'm actually I'm going to keep these in their sequential order in the ammo boxes, and I'm going to continue loading them to see how many reloads that I can get from each case, you know. And as they go out, I'll record it on my spreadsheet here of which firing it was that, you know, maybe I got a split case neck, you know, from here on out, you know, just to see which cases kind of last the longest.
Okay. Now, you're going to neck size these only?
I hadn't thought about that. Normally what I do like my match cases is I will bump the shoulder back 1/1000th of an inch, and I'll neck size it using a Lee Collette neck die. And you know, generally I anneal after every firing for my match brass, but since most people don't anneal every single time, I don't know how many people really anneal out there to begin with. So I'll probably bump the shoulders back with my Redding body die and neck size it with the Lee Collette neck die and just call it good, you know, clean the primer pockets out.
Okay.
And just see how many firings I can get. I know, I think Lapua calls 10 or 20 reloads or something like that per case. So, you know, if I can get more reloadings out of Lapua than I can say Peterson, then, you know, that might be a big bonus there. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think isn't that kind of one of the things that like Lapua and Nosler tout is the fact that you're gonna get more reloadings than you are gonna be out of like the Federalers or the Winchesters, you know, the quote lower cost units.
Yes. Oh, and I'm glad you brought that up. One of the things I noticed whenever I was priming these cases is that Federal and Hornaday had some of the looser primer pockets. I mean, you can, because I hand prime all my brass, and I could specifically remember these two, Federal and Hornaday. The primer went in there nice and tight, but it didn't go in there as tight as, say, your Lapua standard, you know, or your Peterson, which had tight primer pockets. Norma had tight primer pockets. The Hornaday and Federal were kind of on the looser side. So, you know, I may not be able to get as many reloads out of the Hornaday or Federal because the primer pockets may be gone before, you know, say the Lapua or the Peterson or Norma brass.
Mm-hmm. Well, your data results will show that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. But it was a fun test. I would highly suggest folks go out there and look at the spreadsheet that we'll post. I had a lot of fun doing it. Gathered a lot of data that I'll be able to use. So, you know, especially with, you know, I might be using one kind of brass now, and maybe I need to get some brass that's close to the same, that's going to give me close to the same capacity or the same velocity for my load that I currently have. You know, I'll be able to look at this spreadsheet, or anybody will be able to look at this spreadsheet and be like, okay, well, this brass here has about the same capacity, you know, and you won't have to do as much tinkering with your load to fine-tune it to get it back where it needs to be. There was one other thing. Let's hear the difference in weight compared to capacity. There was an ascending order. There was a few on here new from factory: Lapua Standard, Lapua Palma, Nosler, and Norma. All had about the same H2O capacity from the factory, but you have a weight difference from, you know, you got about a 10 grain weight difference with Lapua being heavier than Nosler or Norma, but you had the same case capacity. But when I went back and re-measured them, you still had close to the same case capacity after firing with the Lapua and the Nosler, the Lapua Palma and the Nosler. There was a, you know, about a half grain difference, but pretty close for the most part. So definitely, you know, just straight weighing them compared to the H2O capacity. You know, it could be that one company uses a different mixture of metal in their case, you know, or they may put more brass in their case head compared to the wall. That's why you might have those close, case capacities compared to others.
Well, if you recall, we discussed last week how much metal it takes to make a tenth of a grain. Not very much.
Nope. Not much at all.
10 grains, that's a good bit of metal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's going to definitely be fun to watch this test continue. Great information as it is already, but to watch it continue to grow even more is going to be a pleasure.
Oh, it should be fun. I always enjoy shooting. It'll be interesting to see how many reloads I can get out of these cases without annealing or anything like that.
Yeah.
I was going to make the point that if you do it without annealing, it's going to be a more realistic test. As far as us reloaders out there, I hadn't started annealing my cases until you mentioned that you do it every time. But the point is, most reloaders don't even know how to anneal or even know what an annealing is.
Exactly, exactly.
So that'll be a more realistic test.
And that's kind of what I wanted to do is how, you know, the average reloader, not a match reloader would do it, but how an average reloader would do it. You know, I know I said I was going to use the body die, but that's just, I like using my body die. It gives me good consistency. So I know not everybody has it out there, but, you know, a lot of people do use a neck sizer, but I don't have just a neck sizer. So I use my body die in conjunction with the lead collet die. Do y'all have any more questions about the test?
I'd like to see a copy of that spreadsheet when you're done, Jeremy.
Yeah.
If it's ready to publish.
Yeah, definitely. Will do.
Yeah, please just email it over to me. When you get off the air.
Yes, sir. But it was a lot of fun. I can't. A lot of work, but a lot of fun. And everybody, you know, we'll get this sent out if anybody's interested in. And you can check the numbers out for yourself. There's a lot of numbers on it, so.
Yeah, we'll pin it to the Reloading Podcast Facebook page. Like, we've got the Ladder Reload spreadsheet pinned now, so.
Okay.
Don't have any questions on the Reloading Podcast Facebook page. We do have a comment from everybody's favorite Minnesotan, Mr. Mark Hukum up there in, you know, the Twin Cities, you know. So he was listening to the show.
Don't speak that name in my presence. Sorry, Mark.
No, you ain't. Not a damn bit.
Not after this. So he was listening to the show a couple of weeks ago and about starting over, eh? And he was talking about loading bottleneck cartridges. Bottlenecks. Good thing to drink out of. And he says, restart the war. I have always crimped my hunting loads simply because they go in the gun's internal mag and chamber multiple times a day whenever I climb in and out of my stand. When I get to camp, one in the chamber comes out. When I start walking back in the woods, they go in again. I don't want to be in the woods with a bullet stuck in my chamber and a mag full of powder. So there is a vote for, and that's my personal reason why I crimp my hunting loads also. And then this bum named Jeremy posted on that comment, one of the things I do for my hunting rounds is I put all my rounds in an old pill bottle and put it in a small pocket in my backpack. Not only does it keep them from bumping around, but it keeps them in a watertight container. And that's a kind of a nice, good way to store them. Now, do you put cotton in the end of it just so you don't have to worry about the tips deforming?
No, no. They're going to kill deer. That works.
Because it's not the first time I've seen the pill bottle, but usually I see somebody with a cotton ball down on the bottom. So, but that's usually for their 30-30, you know, with the soft points and stuff.
Now that's the only hunting round that I have ever crimped is my 30-30. And that's just because they are, have a tube magazine.
Right.
That is the only, now my bolt rifle, my bullets aren't going to be that far out in my hunting loads for my 7 mag that I got to worry about them getting stuck into the barrel. So, I don't worry about them. I got enough neck tension on them that they're going to stay put. And generally when I take them out of my rifle, they go back in the pill bottle. Of course, leave it to Mark to post something.
He can be a rabble rouser, you know.
That's exactly how I view it. To crimp or not to crimp, it's another war. And it's like it's a skirmish we might have to put out.
It's a Ford versus Chevy type debate.
Yeah. And it's personal preference to a point. So.
Oh, yeah.
Personal preference depending upon what kind of gun you're using, what style of action.
Right. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, you know, for example, what sort of storage, because I know that a Savage 99 is a rotary magazine. Whereas, and it's also a lever action, whereas the Winchester Model 94 is a tube-fed lever action. Two different style of actions, but yet they're both lever operated.
And there's another lever action that has a different type of magazine. Browning lever action actually has a detachable box magazine.
That's right. I forgot about that. I've only seen one of those.
A buddy of mine used to have one in 308, but unfortunately when it was time to get rid of it, I didn't have the money to buy it. So
yeah, the one I'm talking about is in 243, same cartridge.
Yep.
Jeremy, what kind of action are they talking about?
I don't think Mark said.
I meant Jim and Mike were just talking about an action. What was that?
That was a rotary and a, I don't know, they say lever or lever?
I said
lever. That's what I was getting at. Jim says lever. Mike says lever. I say lever. I was just wondering what you say.
I think Jim's been hanging out with Doc Wesson too much.
I say lever, but.
Well, actually, no, I know why Jim says lever. Because he spends a lot of time up north there, hey?
Eh?
Yeah, eh? Up with the Canadians and stuff, and they say lever. Do you say
trust me, guys, you don't even want to hear the way the Guyanese say it. That's the ones I spend most of my time hanging out with is those real South Americans.
Wanted to give a shout out to Doug Rogers off the reloading room. He's got a nice helper for cleaning out primer pockets. Good on you for getting that helper to jump in and teaching that person the way to reload.
That poor baby wasn't even awake.
her eyes.
Oh my God! That poor. It made my eyes hurt seeing that poor child.
She did look tired.
Yeah.
I think Daddy woke her up for a posed picture.
Here's some fruity pebbles, and I get to work.
That's right.
We're just kidding you, Doug. Just kidding you. There's your shout out, bud.
I'm just perusing reloading room to see if there's any questions.
I can do that.
Hey, did you see the guy with the spark plug?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, there is a little item. I'm not real sure if it's appropriate to bring up or not. But you know Alan Tabor, that glutton for punishment, that guy from down there in Arkansas, just a little bit south of Jeremy, he's been developing some swaged bullets, some super extreme heavyweight swaged bullets. He's got a 368 grain jacketed bullet that he shoots in .44 Magnum. And I believe he come up with a 390 grain .457 diameter bullet for .45-70. And he's also come up with a 305 grain bullet for his .45 ACP. His Ruger revolver chambered in .45 ACP. And, you know, with these oddball bullet weights, it's kind of hard to figure out what your maximum velocity is going to be. Well, I stumbled across here a while back in reading Applied Ballistics by Brian Litz. I stumbled across a formula where you could take a lighter bullet and with known data, let's say the 155 Palma bullet in .308, and you're going to run that at 3,000 feet per second. By the way, that is a pretty hot load just for even a 308 155. But anyway, you take that and you can do a ratio using a 175 grain bullet. And, you know, with pressure being pressure, max pressure is still max pressure, 58,500 PSI in 308 cartridge or whatever the numbers are. Anyway, the point is maximum pressure will always be maximum pressure. You never exceed that. But you could take a formula that Brian Litz put in his book and you can actually figure out what your maximum velocity is going to be. And in this case, with the numbers I've used, 3,000 feet per second, 155 grain Palma bullet, you take a 175 grain bullet, and I do believe the maximum safe velocity for that 175 grain bullet is going to be about 2863. I create a spreadsheet that has this ratio in it. You know, using Brian Litz's formula, I'm not trying to take credit for his work. I just create a spreadsheet that allows you to change it for whatever caliber. This formula works for any caliber. It works also for lighter bullets.
Nice.
If you have a known bullet weight and you want to go down to a lighter bullet, well, that will also work in reverse and give you the maximum velocity with the lighter bullet. I had just unmuted my microphone from clearing my throat. I guess that's a break, Mike. I guess that's a break. God.
That's funny.
If you guys want to see this formula, well, let me actually give the make sure I give the chapter and verse and all that, because we do want to give credit to one of the most knowledgeable ballisticians I've ever heard of.
Yeah,
and this is in Brian Litz's book, Applied Ballistics for Long Range Shooting, and I don't know what chapter this is, but if you'll give me a second, looks like it's chapter 3 of the table contents. Make sure I got it. Gravity drop, page 60. Okay, it has to be, it's in the chapter 5, wind deflection. It's on page 61, the actual formula. And I will make sure that everyone has a copy of it if they want it.
Okay.
And Jason, Mike, and Jeremy. Jason already has a copy, even though he probably doesn't realize it. It's the one I just sent you a couple days ago, Jason.
I saw it.
Good.
Yep.
Okay, good.
Would you send
this formula? This formula is great. I didn't hear you, Jason. I'm sorry.
How did you send it to me, though? I forgot where to look.
No wonder Mike laughed, you old fart. I sent it to you by way of email.
That's on that computer thing?
Yeah.
Not the mailbox, like, out by the street.
At, what is it, roadrunner.net or something like that?
Yeah, that was it.
But anyway, it's a pretty interesting formula. He calls it equation 5.3. Like I said, for full disclosure, I want to make sure that Mr. Litz gets full credit for the work that he's done. This book is quite interesting. I got through about half of it, and I need to get back to it. But that's all I got for the moment.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. So, okay, folks. Thanks for stopping by and sitting a spell. If you're buying from Amazon, please swing by reloadingpodcast.com and hit up the Amazon link. If you're buying from Brownells, do the same for Brownells, please. Doesn't cost you anything extra. Yeah, we know it takes a little extra time, but we greatly appreciate it because it does help out the podcast and the network.
I did it again this week, Mike. I bought a sheath for my Leatherman.
Oops, I did it again.
Yeah, I did it again. Hey, I believe in this podcast, guys. That's why I'm putting my money where my mouth is.
Why, thank you. If you want to heckle us or you have any questions, then send us an email at
reloadingpodcast@firearms.net or firearmstv.net.
No, it's reloaded. Okay, if you want to heckle us or you have any questions or comment about the show, reloading@firearmsradio.tv. If you have a question you want answered on the show, swing by the Reloading Podcast Facebook page and post it there. If you have a question you need an answer to, swing by the Reloading Room Facebook page. You may want to search first because it may have been answered, seeing as how there's 22,000 plus members and there's lots of questions in the room every day. It's a possibility that it did, you know, get answered already. If you do it from a regular browser, the search function that Facebook's got now is pretty good for searching through posts. That's how we pulled up Kowalski's post from a couple weeks ago, so.
Yeah, that posting was about 3 years old.
Yeah, so the search
function. I was impressed.
Yeah, the search function works pretty good if you, just put a couple of keywords in what you're kind of looking for, and it'll pull them up. So, but otherwise, yeah, post it there. To actually post, you do have to become a member.
In the Reloading Room.
Yes, in the Reloading Room. If you want to just read the posts, those are public, and you can just read them without having to join. We'd like you to join, but you don't have to.
It's troll-free zone, political-free zone. Trash-free zone.
Yes,
we don't put up with profanity, we don't put up with politics, and we don't put up with troublemakers.
Just straight reloading.
Once in a while. Reloading is a survival skill, and you know, we do permit a few survival-related skills, but when a guy is talking about rebarreling his gun, he wants to know exactly how to cut the threads, that's a little extreme.
Yeah, that's not something to be
gunsmithing. But you know, if you're talking about checking, making a chamber cast to make sure that your ammunition fits or something like that, well, that's reloading.
Yeah.
But that's also gunsmithing and reloading, which go together like a hand and glove. But we do permit, if you like a guy starting to talk about refinishing his stock, that's just about too far out there. Maybe it is a little too far out there. But anyway, no, we just try to keep it focused on reloading. We're trying to avoid the political machine and all that. We just don't want it.
Nope. We want it to be the way it was designed when Jim and his friend designed it, is to be a place for people to come, talk reloading, and get questions answered.
Absolutely. And it's been that way since the day I opened it up. And I intend for it to stay that way. Thanks for bringing that up, Mike.
You're welcome. So, folks, just remember, if you're going to drink, don't drink and drive. Somebody's playing around with a glass of ice in the background, so that's what made me think of that.
Yeah, it was that bearded guy with a ball cap on his head.
My bad.
Dang it! I hate it when that happens. anyway, thank you, folks. Remember, keep your brass shiny.
Keep your powder dry.
Aim small, miss small.
Squeeze. Don't yank that trigger.
Squeeze. Don't yank that trigger. Whippersnappers.
You dang kids, get off my lawn.
Squeeze. Don't yank that trigger.
The president of the Firearms Radio Network wants us to record a commercial for our show.
What are we going to do?
I don't know, man. It's like I'm freaking out over here. What should we do?
We could talk about our guests, some of the great people that we've had on the show.
Like gun manufacturers, part manufacturers, gun personalities on YouTube, people who write books about guns, TV personalities, all these different things. But I don't know how to put that into words.
Yeah, or the fact that we're funny, but we're informative. I mean, how do we get that out there to the people?
I don't even know. It's like, how do you explain that we're going to make you laugh, but we're also going to teach you how to build an AR-15?
Yeah, I'm lost on this one, man. We are screwed.
I don't know what to do. I mean, if I had to put it into words, I'd say something like a hilarious podcast about guns, gear, gadgets, and the issues that affect responsible gun owners everywhere. Howard Stern for the gun world.
That's perfect. Hey, if you want to hear it or find it, where do you look?
WeLikeShooting.com/show.
I'll be there.
I'll be back.
Welcome to the We Like Shooting Show, episode 106.
This has been a production of the Firearms Radio Network. You can find more information at firearmsradio.tv.